Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
It's Slate Night, the Film Fan Podcast. Now, here are your hosts, Corey and Mason.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Slate Night, the Film Fan Podcast, the podcast made by film fans for film fans. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Mason Schmidt, here with my good bud, Corey Knutson.
Ew.
I just said good, but not even best bud.
Just good?
This, yeah.
Just a fine
bud. This is
bud.
The second time I've flubbed that line, yeah. And now it's just...
Every week it gets worse.
Yeah. Last time you called it out, and I was like, oh, wow, I really just served. And this time I'm like, I feel bad about that. I did him a disservice. So my best bud, Corey Knutson, we're going to unpack this past week of movie watching, whether it was stuff that we saw on streaming, what we saw in theaters. We'll look at physical media roundup, what Corey picked up this week. My stuff is back at home or in the mail. We'll also look at what few new releases that are really exciting us that are on the horizon at the end of this week. And notable developments in the world of movies, even though there's no trailers really to talk about this week, or at least trailers that we watched. But aside from that, we're coming off of Thanksgiving weekend. We got to have Thanksgiving together.
Mm-hmm.
Sadly, we didn't watch the Vikings game today together, but so that's fine.
It's really
that was
fine.
Maybe one of the saddest, most upsetting fucking professional
first
sports
time,
outings I've ever seen in my life.
I think they said first time we've been shut out in 18 years.
Yep, I saw that stat. They put that up like midway through the game when it was already starting to go its way, where they're like, wow, Brosmer is maybe not the key, which also like can't really fault him too much. But yeah, what a rough fucking game for Minnesota Vikings players and fans, because that was just an atrocity.
Good thing we have other teams
on the field. Yeah, good thing we have other teams that are also just so good at setting our expectations high just to absolutely cut them in the knees. But Corey, what are you going to be drinking today, and how have you been?
You know what? Yeah, like you mentioned, I'm the only one drinking today. You're going to get a little anal probe in a few days.
I was just going to say a medical procedure, but I'm getting a colonoscopy on Wednesday. So I was like, and I've been not like following any sort of diet restrictions or guidelines that they definitely emailed over to me weeks ago of things that like, hey, low fiber, maybe cut these things out. Haven't been paying attention to that because it was just Thanksgiving. And I was like, oh, I'll look at it like the days leading up to the colonoscopy. And then I did. And I was like, ooh. Oh, okay. Well,
yikes.
Hopefully this goes fine.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm going to be drinking water today, and then I think, Tuesday, it's going to be a clear liquid, like all Gatorade diet. So
you are going to love it.
I'm going to watch a lot of movies.
Knowing you, like the procedure itself, you're going
to
love it. Love it.
Sure. One of these fucking episodes, you're going to see one of us just leap over the other end of the desk. Me when I get you, just
fucking Bilbo when he sees the ring in Fellowship. Whoa, shit, okay. But anyways, what I'm drinking today is a fucking mouthful of a title called Microdosing Nelson Sauvin Once a Day IPA from Black Stag Brewing. It's pretty good. I like it. It's not my favorite IPA, but it's like a New Zealand style IPA.
I like Black Stag a good amount. I don't know if we've had anything from their brewery on our podcast yet, but their beer is usually pretty good. It's a fun brewery too. They got good food.
We had something from there. I don't remember what it was, but the final, they have a little description of it on here, and they're like, open your mind, put this in your mouth, is the last line on the can.
Yep.
So, I follow orders, I guess.
You read that can, you're like, you're coming home.
Like, if a Busch Light can said that on there, just put me in your mouth and be like, all right, yeah.
I can't believe that's not their slogan. Or, like,
should
Bud
be.
Light with Shane Gillis, like, really ramping up, doing a lot of their marketing. I'm like, you should really lean into, like, some of his humor.
Right. So, anyways, it's all right. But, yeah, I'll be taking over the drinking for today. I already had one watching the Vikes game.
I'm going to be taking over the drinking for the day. I I did my fair share for holiday weekend.
Yeah. We drank a little bit on Thanksgiving. Me and your brother had some whiskey cokes. We kept going downstairs refilling while everyone was doing other shit. You just look over at me and just, refill? Yeah.
It's scary that you get along better with my brothers than I think they get along with me. And I'm like, you know what? I'm happy to just, like, fill my own spot. I'll just become my own backup. Like, that's fine.
Fifth brother. It's great. Yeah, but fun Thanksgiving, though. A big part of the Thanksgiving season the night before was the premiere of Stranger Things Season 5. Kind of a big event TV thing, which we don't get a lot of anymore. It's kind of mainly just movies. TV event, like, week-to-week watching has kind of gone to the wayside, which is sad because I think that, you know, even in an era that we didn't experience, like, fucking MASH or whatever, like, that was a huge thing and all this shit where people were sitting down every week talking about it at work. Mm-hmm. And Stranger Things kind of brings that in, and especially around the holidays, people are with their families watching. So the first four episodes of Season 5 came out, and then we're going to have 5 through 7 coming out on Christmas, and then the finale is coming out on New Year's Eve. So I know you haven't watched this first batch episode, so I won't really get into spoilers here. We'll probably do that once you catch up with it in the coming weeks, but overall thoughts on these first four. I liked it. I thought it was a good start to this season. And I really do enjoy Stranger Things a lot. I have never really had the same frustrations with it that people have, where it's like, the kids look so old now, and like, it takes so long in between seasons. I'm like, one, like, the kids, they're gonna age. And it's kind of like, it's always been to me like the Harry Potter thing, where it's like, kids are aging through, and like, they're getting older and going through school, so like, it makes sense to me. And then taking as long as they do, like, the fourth season was in summer of 2022, so over 3 years now, but, like, each of the episodes is at least an hour long, so they're making, like, 8 movies in 3 years, when a lot of franchises put out one movie in 3 years, so I'm like, I can get behind it, it's fine. And I think that coming into this season, you know, you had and kind of general spoilers for the first four seasons, I suppose. Ended the fourth season with the fucking cracks in the ground. Hawkins was getting enveloped by the Upside Down,
upside
whatever.
Down's coming to Hawkins.
Vecna's, you know, got his Reign of Terror going, so the team is dealing with that. And the first thing that I liked about these first four episodes is that it's kind of back to a Hawkins-focused story where everybody's there. Because the last few seasons we've had, like, or at least season four was kind of like in Russia and then here in California and kind of bouncing around, which I liked that and it was fun. But nice to have kind of a season one feel of everybody in Hawkins, and they're like going in their crawl, which is the name of the first episode, and they're like trying to go into the Upside Down, figure out where Vecna is, find him, kill him. So they kind of have this strategy, this like plot to, you know, when the military, when the government's making a run down there, they kind of follow him and go in. So I like that aspect of it, and you get the team back together, just doing all that. And I think that you get some good dynamics between a lot of the characters in these first four. Hopper and Elle are back together on a little mission. And again, like, they didn't see each other at all pretty much in season four. Just basically at the end, like, the epilogue
part. The reunion that they get.
Yeah, and like season three, they were kind of doing their own thing and they were fighting and all this shit. So nice to see them together. Robin and Will have some really sweet moments together. And it kind of, some conversations they have play into some key moments in the end of the fourth episode and of Will actually getting something to do, finally. He's not just fucking scratching the back of his neck feeling goosebumps. I mean, he does a lot of that in this first four, but he actually is becoming a key character instead of just being the, you know, fucking Doug in the Hangover movies where it's like the object of everybody else. So nice to see that, and I mean, you get some nice things of Dustin kind of reeling from the loss of Eddie in the last season. That was his buddy, and, you know, going through, and everybody thinks that Eddie killed, you know, Chrissy and all these other people, but, you know, everyone knows the truth, and Dustin's kind of dealing with that. You get the little love triangle with Nancy, Jonathan, and Steve, which I've always been a Nancy and Steve 100%. Jonathan's always just been weird.
Jonathan is a serial killer. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. I haven't watched this beginning part of the season yet, but every time I see him on screen, and, like, it's maybe the actor, I don't know, but or it's just the weird kind of idiosyncratic, like, behavior of this weird, awkward character. I'm like, you skin cats, and you love it. Like, I've always had, he's always been off-putting. He's always been, like, reliable and nice, but I'm like, come on. Like,
Steve.
Steve's the best.
He's got the hair. He's cool. So, you know, you have all those plot lines. It's fun. You have the characters. You know, and I like a lot of kind of what's happened in these first four. And you get some cool reveals of, especially with Max, what she has kind of been up to or what her character's been doing, I should say. So I think that's good. I think where the show is starting to have some cracks in its fifth season is that it is a bit repetitive, and the team making a plan. They have a scene where they put the map out and say, we have to do this and go follow this route and do this here. We've seen all that before. Something goes wrong, they got to fix it. And, you know, it's kind of, at this point, I'm like, all right, I'm glad we're wrapping up now, because this is about the most I could take of this. Yeah. I don't know if another season I could really handle. Also, like, this has always kind of been a thing, but the dialogue is, like, very goofy, but it kind of, like, works for me, because it is playing on, like, the Amblin 80s adventure movies. Yeah. So, like, it kind of works, but there is some, like, both performances and dialogue in this first four episodes where I'm like, I don't know. I don't really care for that.
Yeah. I haven't watched any of this yet. My only contribution to this conversation on Stranger Things Season 5 is going to be me asking you to rank these first four episodes. I'm like, from what I've heard, that kind of the cliffhanger of this break, this episode four leading into like this delay until we got Christmas episodes, was the best. So I just want to get your opinion on that. And then I don't know if we've talked about it before in preparation to Season 5 coming up. We might have. I feel like we might have. But I still want to get a new current ranking of those first four seasons then as well from you.
Yeah, so as far as the seasons of the show leading into this, I would go 1, 4, 3, then 2. I think 1 is just the most pure of that kind of 80s Amblin nostalgia of kids on their bikes, the Stephen King of it all, kind of. So I really enjoy that season. I think Season 4... I love Vecna. I like the introduction of him, so I think that and kind of the twist in Season 4 worked really well. 3, I really like the mall summer vibe. I think that's really cool. And then Season 2, it has the episode...
It was the worst episode in Stranger Things.
Which, if you're doing a watch-through, don't skip that episode. If you're leading up to Season 5, don't skip that episode. I don't want to spoil anything, but I'm curious to see if they redeem that, or at least kind of make it like... We realized that wasn't loved, so we're trying to make it a little bit better, at least.
It's like an Infinity War when they're like, well, we'll go back to Thor the Dark World a little bit. Like, let's try and tread lightly and resuscitate this kind of poorer entry in the franchise. That's I don't know, but that's how it sounds.
Yeah, so don't skip that one. A lot of people do on their rewatches. Mm-hmm. Season 2, but overall, is kind of just like more of the first season, but not quite as good. But yeah, as far as kind of these first four episodes, I think it probably would go 4-3-2-1. I think it just keeps getting better for me. That fourth episode, the last like 30 minutes, is really sweet. There's some great action. It's filmed really well. There's kind of like some one shots that are great. It is a little bit digital looking. I feel like even the first couple seasons.
Want to make a difference in your community, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Seasons were like a little bit more gritty and like, I don't know, had like even the Upside Down, it looked better than it does now. But... Damn, Demogorgons are going crazy this season. There's a part where they're just deucing up some military guys, and one of them like lobs it up to another one, and the other one just slams it down like prime Wade DeBron. And I'm like, damn! And then Vecna walks in, just like fucking MJ, and I'm like, whoa! Oh, damn. So, you know, pretty satisfying little cliffhanger for this fourth episode. Again, I enjoyed these first four. I think it was a nice kind of re-entry into it. I like where a lot of the characters are at right now. I just hope that it doesn't... I hope it goes away from a bit of the repetitiveness that we've saw from these first few, but overall, I liked it. I'm curious to see what you think of it.
Yeah, I think I'm a little bit tougher on this show than you maybe, or I don't love it as much as you, especially that first season. It took me a while. It's the first two seasons are my, like, they're tied for my least favorite of the four that we've gotten so far. Season two did a lot of, like, really getting me into Stranger Things, but then you do have that really kind of weak episode where it's just, like, everything bad with Stranger Things. You can kind of point to that one episode where she gets her little X-Men crew and they all suck. But maybe I'll see him again. Who knows? I really love season four. That is by far and away my favorite. Season three, I really liked. It was a little bit more of a refreshing, like, brighter, upbeat, more 80s neon-soaked tone. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, I'm vibing with this. I like this a lot. And like I said, one and two kind of rounded out. It took me a while watching through season one to have it, like, really click with me. I didn't love a lot of season one where everyone was like, oh, it's great, it's fantastic. I'm like, it's fine. Like, it's just 80s nostalgia bait. And to a degree, I still believe that. But after kind of growing with this franchise, watching it more, I've gotten further invested with it. I still don't love every single character, but I do overall care about where most of the characters end up. And I'm interested and invested in, like, Hopper and Steve and Dustin. So I'm really excited to kind of sit down and watch this. I probably will likely start episode one tonight with my wife, just because we're definitely going to watch together. We watched season four all the way through together. And I really dig... While I like the week-to-week releases, I am also really interested and in getting invested with how Stranger Things, at least season 4 and season 5, have been doing their releases of, like, a mid-season, and then we'll do a second release.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what they did, I think, with the fourth season. And then this season, we're getting that finale. It drops on this day, but we'll have two chunks of releases before that building up to it. So I'm excited for that. I'm excited to see kind of where this resolves itself. And I, from what you were saying about, like, we already got another, like, sit down, plan out the scene, drop the map, what are we doing? So I'm also getting to the point where I'm like, this show I think has mostly run its course for me, so I'm excited for this to be the ending to a lot of these character arcs and just have some finality to it and be satisfied with that type 5-season arc of these characters and this show. So I'm really excited to kind of just see how it resolves itself and works out. But I'm excited, even though it's not always the thing that I'm the most amped to sit down and watch.
Also, I love, I don't know if the cameras can really see these, but they put out some great, like, Blu-ray releases of the first two seasons in these, like, old VHS cases. I wish they did that for 3, 4, and 5. Mm-hmm. They only did it, and they're kind of like a limited edition thing.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting, but I really like those. They have cool, like, posters and other shit in there, so... I'm a fan. I can't wait to hear your thoughts. Keep watching the season. We'll do spoiler breakdowns, I'm sure, as the, you know, other three and then finales coming out. So we'll keep on that. As far as movies go, we had Wake Up Dead Man, a Knives Out mystery, the third Knives Out film. And it was in limited theaters, not in a lot of big chains, not in AMCs. But for us, luckily, it was in, like, Imagine Theaters and, like, the Maine is showing it around here. So I know in some parts of the country, people just couldn't see it at all, which sucks because this movie's really good.
Yeah.
You know, it's definitely my second favorite of the Knives Out movies, right behind the first one. I think it edges out Glass Onion a bit. And for me, what works a little bit better in this one is the kind of gothic church vibe as Benoit Blanc. Who Daniel Craig is just great in this role. He has so much fun with it. You can tell him and Rian Johnson are just so invested in it. And he's investigating this murder that happens at a church, and it's basically the whole kind of convent, the coven of people there that are all the suspects. The cop, the doctor in the town, people at the church, the Thomas Hayden Church is the groundskeeper. And it's just a great cast. I mean, we mentioned last week all the people that are in this. Josh O'Connor is awesome in this movie.
Oh,
he's really good. I've liked what I've seen from him, just, like, in Challengers. I know you don't care for that movie. I think it's fine.
Still great in that movie.
Yeah, like, I think he's good.
He's never not sold me, but this is the biggest sell. Like, he killed it.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is that the first, probably, like, 30 minutes of this movie is just him, like, reading a letter about it. And we just see Benoit Blanc reading the letter. He's not even a character, really, for the first... Mm-hmm. part of it. And I think that works really well because Josh O'Connor is a great lead, but you get to get introduced to everybody, you see the location, and it is just like a small, like, church, and then kind of the groundskeeper's house, and then, like, maybe one other building mainly that we're in.
Tomb or whatever.
Yeah. And it's, I really like that. So I thought that he was great in the movie. Glenn Close stood out to me as well, just a great supporting performance, and just a lot of great humor mixed in with her character, but a lot of others as well. Rian Johnson just has kind of the feel of these whodunits, and having good humor with Benoit Blanc and flipping the meat of the dead body. Flip the meat, my favorite line from the movie. But also, it kind of surprised me in this movie is the amount of time that they took to delve into religion.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I didn't really expect that. Obviously, it takes place in a church, but it kind of dives into, like, how one person can influence a lot of people, if you want to call it a cult or whatever, but just how people can so easily be influenced by somebody that's very loud. And in this case, Josh Brolin's character, who's the what's his name? Wicks? Monsignor Wicks?
Yeah, Monsignor Wicks.
He was the leader of this church, and he's kind of just this very passionate person that a lot of people flock to. And I thought that it was really kind of a great balance of that religion stuff, of the great whodunit, and then some good humor mixed in as well. So this was overall a big win for me. I love this Rian Johnson Knives Out trilogy. Mm-hmm. I think it's fun. I never can guess who it is. I'm always... I mean, obviously, everybody's trying to be like, oh, is it this person or that? And like, I may get parts of it, but not all the pieces in the end. So, really a lot of fun. I think it's great, and I just wish it had been in more theaters for people to see.
Yeah, I was really excited to go check this out in theaters. Were you able to see... You saw Glass Onion in theaters.
We saw it together, yeah.
We saw it together.
Yep.
Did Sid go with us, too?
I think Allie came with us.
Yeah, it was Allie? Yeah. Okay. But being able to see that one in theaters and keep that alive, and hopefully whether there is a fourth one, if it continues with Netflix or not, because I know their contract is up after this third release, second release with Netflix. I hope that we get more, and if so, that it goes straight to theaters and it's more of a wide release thing so people can experience these movies in theaters, because I love Knives Out. And similar to you, I would say Knives Out, that first one, is still my favorite. This new one, Wake Up Dead Man, is the closest at topping it. I still really love Glass Onion. This Wake Up Dead Man was just the tone of what I wanted in a murder mystery. It was a little bit more dour, a little bit more serious. Yeah, there's moments of humor. The flip the meat is one of the funniest moment, I think, in the franchise so far. You get really good Benoit Blanc-isms in this. And also, Daniel Craig still looks so fantastic in a suit. I'm like, if they wanted to call him up for another Bond, he could still do it. He looks great. I know he died, but like, come on. Spoiler alert for No Time to Die. But Rian Johnson, for all of his directorial efforts, has really worked for me. And this one, I think, is him fully understanding the tropes he's established within his own films, and then still continuing on outside the box, giving us really good conversations about faith. Good comedy, as always. Good twists and turns. Like, in this one, more so than the other films. Like, Glass Onion, I feel like, yeah, the tone is a little bit more upbeat. It's a bunch of friendly people, a group of people on an island. It's a little bit more like the whodunit kind of, for me, falls to the back, where the whodunit, who perpetrated this act, who murdered this Monsignor Wicks and this impossible crime. The mystery felt more front and center in this film than it did in Glass Onion. I also really loved the cast in this film. I think of the three, this might have my favorite cast of characters. I think Knives Out, maybe we get better use of the cast, but this one with Glenn Close, Josh O'Connor, Josh Brolin, Mila Kunis was really refreshing to see her on screen again, just because I feel like I haven't seen her in a lot. Jeremy Renner, Thomas Hayden Church, again, him and like Clancy Brown have two of the, and Coleman Domingo have like the best voices ever.
Also Jeffrey Wright.
And Jeffrey Wright, voice. He was maybe a little underused, but I really did enjoy his addition to this film. And I think of the Knives Out films, the one thing that this Wake Up Dead Man does better than the other ones for me is that co-lead, aside from Benoit Blanc. I think Josh O'Connor is the best protagonist or co-lead in this franchise. I loved him in this film. I love that you get a great amount of time spent with him before Benoit Blanc really is, like you mentioned, a character in this film. We have a good framing device that sets up, oh, well, what's going on? What's this thing, this letter that Benoit Blanc's reading? And then when we kind of harken back and we take the long way around to get back to that moment, it's like, all right, now I'm fully invested in all these characters, and now Benoit's here. And one geeky kind of nerd out thing, at least when I first was seeing it, it's a reoccurring thing that happens throughout the movie, but when it first happened, was a big thing that just got me giddy and excited, because I've never seen this in a movie before, and I told you about this, I think, at Thanksgiving, but when Josh O'Connor and Daniel Craig are in the church and they're discussing kind of what went down, how it went down, the order of things, the light shifts in the church. And I was like, oh my God, finally, a movie is showing like the sun going behind a cloud and the warm light transferring into like a cooler tone, and then it's getting darker. And I was like, you don't see that in movies. And I was just so thrilled by it. But then they do use that as a reoccurring kind of motif whenever they're really talking about faith. And that was another thing. I think that this film perfectly describes and dissects why faith is important to some people and why people poke holes in it and are like, that's not for me, I don't believe in it. But why it can be a sense of comfort for others. And I really enjoyed that. I think that that was a great addition to this mystery within the Knives Out world. And I really had a great time with this. The mystery wasn't necessarily the most interesting to me. I still think the first Knives Out and how it kind of skewers that whodunit mystery setup was so refreshing. I think this one's really good. It took us a while, I think, at least in the third act, as we're resolving the movie, I'm like, all right.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
I think you're over-explaining this mystery. Just get to the point with it. The movie felt a little long, but I was never bored. It was just more of like, all right, I think you're spinning your wheels when you could give us the answer now. But regardless, I was still satisfied with what the answer was. I thought it was a good mystery. I didn't really catch on for a good chunk of it. And I loved the characters. So I don't really have any complaints about this movie. It's my number 10 slot for 2025 for movies of this year. So it might go up, it might go down, but I really was 100% satisfied by this movie, and I had a great time.
Yeah, the lighting that you mentioned is so great. I mean, it kind of like you said, it goes with the mood of the scene, of what the characters are talking about, and it was used so well. There's also a great scene with like a flashing light from like a garage kind of camera, and that's kind of a key part of the movie that I just thought was done really well. But yeah, the faith discussions, I thought there was one really great scene in this movie where just kind of right in the middle, where Josh O'Connor and Daniel Craig are obviously trying to figure this out, who did it, and Josh O'Connor calls this woman who is like owns this company or is part of this company.
Yeah.
And like they need some information from her, and she's like, "All right, well, I can call you back with the info." But then she's like, "Can I just talking to Josh O'Connor?" She's like, "Can I just talk to you? Like, I'm going through a really tough time right now." Josh O'Connor's like, "Yeah, like I'm a priest. Like I'm just gonna sit down with you for like 30 minutes or however long it was." And he just like took the time to do that in the midst of this investigation, which I thought was just great and kind of. It elevates this above another whodunit, maybe like the Kenneth Branagh ones, where it wouldn't have taken the time to do that. But I just thought it was great, even though Benoit Blanc was annoyed. He's like, "Dude, we need to go."
Here. But like seeing it, that moment of realization on Josh O'Connor's face in that moment, because when he's talking to the woman that works at like the lift company or wherever they got the stuff to open the tomb, and you see it like fall on his face that he's like, shit, I still have a duty to the people within this community, even though like I'm new here and people already don't really love me and think I'm part of the reason why this guy got murdered. I do have a responsibility to be a priest and guide these people through hard times. And when he just like, yeah, no, I have a second, he stands up and leaves the room, and then we get that cut to the ending of that conversation. Benoit Blanc just opened the door and he's just like, yeah, okay, so the mystery. And it's just like, wow, the mystery isn't 100% like the focus of this movie, and it still works. Mm-hmm. Like, you have, this is a character-driven movie that has a murder mystery plot happening, but it will follow the characters instead of the murder mystery, and it does it to the benefit of the movie at times. So I was really kind of surprised by that. It was really refreshing.
Yeah, and I think that Rian Johnson, the reason that he works so well here is that he does a lot of subverting your expectations here, which a lot of people don't like about The Last Jedi in parts.
Love it.
We'll have we've teased a long discussion about The Last Jedi and the sequel trilogy. We'll do it at some point.
Maybe even around Christmas. That gives us a good excuse. I mean, it's not really a Christmas movie, but...
Or before Mando and Grogu. Maybe we'll do a little Star Wars thing there. But I think that it works really well here because you kind of mentioned him, like, doing tropes on his own movies a little bit of, like... Even the reveal and how Benoit Blanc reveals how he knows everything. And, like, you kind of get it delayed a little bit. Like, you think he's going to do all of it, and then it kind of delays a second, and then he does it.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have everything yet. It's just, like, Rian Johnson just has a great control of that, and I think it works really well for this franchise. So, another big win. I'm down for more of these, man. Like, this is a franchise where I'm, like... Because they're all so independent and they don't connect to each other, it's just Benoit Blanc is the one link. I'm down for however long these guys want to do it and have another mystery and all these fun locations. Give me all the Knives Out movies. I am here for them.
Yeah, if you had to... Because I thought, like, all right, make it a nice tight trilogy and, like, having that Netflix deal. Like, okay, we were getting two more building off of that original. So I was like, okay, we'll just get a trilogy. But now there's already the conversations of, like, well, maybe a fourth one. Like, we could make this movie until until Daniel Craig's 90. Because, like, it's Benoit Blanc. Tell you're 90. Like, he's basically Columbo. Like, he could just continue on. I was wondering if... Fourth one does happen, like they're already kind of speculating and potentially working on now. What setting do you want? Because we've gotten very distinct set. We had, like, setting and kind of scenario. We had a family in their home. We had this millionaire and all of his friends on a tropical island. And now we have this priest at a church. Like, I really like how we're really just jumping around and Benoit Blanc just finds himself somewhere within it. Do you have a kind of a dream setting or scenario you'd want to see for a fourth Knives Out film?
Something that popped into my mind was an airport. I think that could be fun on a plane. Like, somebody dies on a plane, you're in the airport.
More of a contained area.
TSA. Like, I just feel like there's a lot of areas for, like, good humor in a lot of those things, too. I'm just trying to think of, like, casting, too, because, like, getting Michael B. Jordan in one of these things, like, that could be really fun. Oh. You could go through just all of the actors that you would want in one of these movies, but, you know, Nick Nolte, Gary Busey.
Why not? Yeah.
You know, fucking. Yeah, how about you, though, for location?
I like that idea because, like, you could even have the murder happen while he's at the airport on his way, like, he's going someplace else. Mm-hmm. Like, he's going on a vacation, and then a murder happens. Like, God damn it!
On my fucking vacation.
It's like, I was just about to leave.
Yeah.
Just when I think I'm out.
Pull me back in.
I think, and maybe they won't do it because it is kind of stereotypical or classic, but, like, confined in a mansion on a hill. Like, very classic, kind of keeping with that gothic theme, but in a contained chamber piece of, like, hey, like, almost like Clue, like, we need to all stick together because one of us is a murderer. So, like, it's a bit overdone, but I love that setting and that style, and I think it'd be cool to see Benoit Blanc, like, living in or at a place, invited to a dinner for this mysterious person, and then someone gets murdered at this dinner in this big mansion, and having to try and dissect it and figure it out while the murderer is loose in the room, maybe actively still killing people. I'm like, I like the idea of Benoit Blanc being kind of up against the clock and, like, more of a chamber piece where he can't leave this room or leave this setting. He's stuck here. So, which kind of you get a little bit in Glass Onion, but it's not as pressing throughout the entirety of that movie. But Wake Up Dead Man, it's great. It will be out on Netflix December 12th, so in a couple weeks here. If it is showing in a theater near you, definitely go check it out because it's worth your time. And it's, it's a little, like, a more small-scale movie. It's a mystery, but it's still beautiful to see. Like, it's still super well shot. And great lighting. It's really well acted. It's a great time at the theaters. And, like, bring a posse of people. Just bring as many people as you can. It's a good, like, communal watch with people. And, like, packed theater, the theater I went to, which I saw it late at night, and people were fucking having, like, just the time of their life. And everyone's laughing. Everyone's in on it. Like, it's a great kind of communal experience to see one of these movies in theaters. A movie that I was able to go check out and see this past week, which I think went wide. I think we talked about maybe last Friday. I don't even remember. But Hamnet, directed by Chloe Zhao, director of Eternals and Oscar-winning Nomadland, as well as The Rider, which I haven't seen, but you have seen.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
This is the film starring Jesse Buckley, Joe Alwyn, Paul Mescal, and Emily Watson. It's about the story of Hamnet, the boy the son of William Shakespeare, and how that boy's life inspires him to write this story, Hamlet, the famous play. This is a film that every marketing anything has been like best picture of the year. Like it's all like, and it very much is like outside looking in. And even after watching this movie, I was like, yes, this is 100%. If I didn't like this movie or didn't think that this was worthy of that conversation, I'd be like, oh, it's just Oscar bait. Like this movie's Oscar bait. You could kind of like hurl those critiques or complaints against this movie. And I'd be like, yeah, you kind of say that as someone who did see it. But I genuinely believe that this is one of the best movies of the year without it being Oscar bait. Like, I think it's so well done. It's so well shot and beautifully acted. Jessie Buckley, I believe 100% is a shoo-in for best actress this year. Like, yes, she'll get nominated, but also I think she's going to win. Granted, I haven't seen every movie from this year, so there's performances I'm definitely missing out on. But Jessie Buckley, far and away, stole it. Stole this movie. Sold me. This is a tragic story. It's a little bit of a love story, but it's so romantically made. Like, and you'd expect that from something having Shakespeare attached to it, but you get romance, you get tragedy, you get sometimes you get that in the same moment in this movie, and it's really hard to sit through at times. It's really a depressing watch, and I could feel like you could feel the weight of this movie. It's like watching Prisoners when you're just like, oh my God. Like, it just gets to be depressing when Hugh Jackman's losing his shit in the car, like, find my daughter! Like, all that stuff. You feel that in that moment. And you have so many kind of analogous moments in this film of just people just being beaten down by life. And the way they have to live at this specific in this specific time period. Like I said, the performances across the board are great. I think that this is the best film, and I haven't seen The Rider, but this is the best film Chloe Zhao has made. I like it way more than No Man's Land. I like it more than The Eternals. I think it's so exceptionally well shot. It's visually stunning, and it's just heartbreaking through and through. And you're going to have to kind of be in that mindset to go see this movie. It's not an easy watch. And there are moments that I was like, fuck, I don't want to sit. I don't want to watch. Like, I know what's going to happen. I don't want to watch this happen. Like, I don't want to see this play out for these characters. But Jessie Buckley is so commanding in this movie. Paul Mescal is so warm. The child actors are great too. I didn't mention any of them, but they're sensational in this. And it's the last 30 minutes of this movie where you get to see the story of Hamlet kind of bleed into the movie and the production of Hamlet, just on the edge of my seat. Just nonstop, not like it's nonstop action, but just like nonstop relentless emotion. And being able to experience it through Jessie Buckley's eyes in this film was sensational. I loved this. Also, this is a wild thing, but like the way, like I believe this is very authentic to how they would show plays back then, but how crazy it would be to see a play performed in like just an open like amphitheater, open stage, and it's just like off the road, like people walking and people are just jabbing, just talking to the actors while they're performing a scene. They're like, oh no! It's just like, whoa, I would lose my living shit if I lived back then and went to a show. But this is so well done and authentic, I feel like, is the best way to put it. The synopsis alone describes it as like a timeless masterpiece, at least Hamlet, but also this film being just this beautiful masterpiece of filmmaking. And I do think that this is one of the best made films I've seen in the past couple of years. Maybe not my favorite.
Want to make a difference in your community, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
but it is in my top 10 for 2025, and it's just a strong showcase of directing, acting, cinematography. It's just such a great through and through 100% no cut corners perfect movie. Like it's a great experience, and I can't wait for you to watch it. I feel like you'll have a lot of the same kind of thoughts and opinions that I have. You might, I don't know. There are some things where I'm like, you might appreciate it more than you like it. Where now I'm like, I liked everything that I was worried that I would only appreciate for like the craft. But I actually left this movie being like, I loved this. Like it was so well done. And I really enjoyed watching it, even though it's a lot of hard stuff to watch.
Yeah, this is, I mean, you kind of mentioned that this is the Oscar packaging of like, as of right now, this is kind of the front runner, I would say, is maybe people are like, a best picture, at least on the top one or two, maybe choices there. I mean, Chloe Zhao, her movies all look beautiful. Like, Eternals is one of the best looking superhero movies. I think we talked about that even last week a little bit. Jessie Buckley, I'm a massive fan of. I think she is underrated, and I think this role will hopefully kind of just burst her through into the superstardom that she deserves. Because, like, she just popped up in supporting roles. I mean, she's very good in The Lost Daughter. Got nominated for an Oscar for that. She was in Women Talking. Alex Garland's movie Men, which she's good in that. The movie, you know, I have thoughts on some of that one.
But she's great in it. Yeah.
She's great. And again, kind of the movie I'm thinking of ending things, which I don't like that movie, but I think she's really good in it. So she's just always put in great performances. And Paul Mescal is kind of another rising star. So I'm excited to see it. We kind of have this little back and forth game of like one of us will see a movie and then the next week we like hear each other talk about it. We're like, fuck, I gotta see this movie.
Yeah.
So I'll probably be seeing that this week, you know, or at least in the next coming weeks for sure. Because that's kind of one of the last big Oscar movies, I feel like. That and Marty Supreme are kind of the two.
Until we get more of the nominations where it's like, oh, I didn't even fucking hear about that movie. Now I need to go check that out. But I feel like, we're starting to get, I feel like, a list together of what we think would likely be that 10 Oscar Best Picture noms, and Hamnet definitely, I think, will not only get the nomination, I think it well deserves it, and I think it, regardless of not knowing what else it's going to be nominated against, I think it has a good shot at potentially winning, too. Mm-hmm. It's a great movie.
Yeah, I think we've been pretty on top of stuff this year. Like, I think with the podcast, this has helped with...
Yeah, it's just fucking exhausting.
It's been a sprint the, like, last month. It's been a lot, but it's fun. We do it for you guys, for you 20 people.
Yeah. Once fall hit, it was like, fuck, I get there's, like, one big release, but then there's also, like, three other movies going to Limited that I need to try and seek out and try and catch.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, but it's a lot of movies coming out. Another movie that came out this past week was Zootopia 2, the long-awaited sequel to the movie from 2016, which I love that original movie. I rewatched it this week, and it's a movie in the, I'd say, like, post-2000 for Disney animated movies that just really stands out to me as one of their best. And the reason for that is that it deals with a lot of big themes and you know, a good messaging for kids of accepting people regardless of who they look like. I know you have problems with that sometimes.
Okay,
but... But that's all a different story. But
different story.
But you know, a good message for kids of regardless of what people look like, sound like, you know, all these animals together are accepting each other, and it's also just a really fun like mystery kind of investigation element with Judy Hopps becoming this police officer and investigating corruption within, you know, the government of Zootopia and the, you know, the politics of it and all that. So. Kind of some like heavier themes that you would maybe see in a live action investigation movie.
Yeah, it's like a 70s noir film. Like it's straight up like Chinatown.
Yeah,
like,
right.
You get parts of that in the first Zootopia. I rewatching this a couple weeks ago, I forgot about how much I really enjoyed this movie. And it's the least kids movie there has to be, at least of recent memory. Just because the only thing that makes this a kids movie is that they're animals.
Right.
Like, the shit that's going down, the things that are happening, and, like, basically drugs are happening, and, like, people are getting fucking thrown in jail, or, like, prosecuted, or and there's a bunch of prejudice going on in Zootopia, and we're just like, oh, and I'm just a cop trying to figure it out. Like, oh, and I'm a bunny. Like, isn't that cute? It's like, okay. Like, we also maybe have a meth lab. Like,
right, yeah, Breaking Bad references.
And Godfather references. Things that kids are just gonna be like, don't know at all what that is.
Yep. And I think that, like, the reason that this movie, and I'll talk about the second one here, too, that they work so well is that they do have that good blend of, like, parents that bring their kids to these movies can get those references. Like, oh, they said Jesse and Walter in the meth lab. Like, that's fun. And, like, the good messages. But they're also, they have, like, some fun humor in there. They have some, a lot of really fun action in both of the movies, too. Just good sequences there. And they don't, I think something, it hits that good middle ground of not being, like, a Minions movie. Where it's just for fucking kids. And it's just, like, dumbass jokes. But it's also not a movie like Soul, which I like that movie a good bit, but I, as like an animated kids movie, I think kids aren't going back to that one as much.
No.
Yeah. Like, this is a movie, and from the box office of the second one, like, it's making a lot of money, yeah. And it really straddles that line of the fun action adventure with these fun animals and a cool world. You get different, like, climates within Zootopia of the tundra town and, like, the desert and all this stuff. But then you get those adult themes, you get good messaging in there. So it really hits all those things well. The second movie, like I said, coming 9 years after, I'm surprised it took them this long to do a sequel. Yeah. Just it's a world that kind of warrants a sequel, I feel like. And I think that this movie is a really solid sequel. I like this one more than something like Moana 2 last year. I just think it has kind of, you know, better themes in there and kind of continues that fun investigation element to it. While going to different parts of this Zootopia world. And it continues a lot of the fun references. There's a great reference to The Shining in this movie that I love. Also one to Ratatouille, which is very funny and got a big laugh on all the kids in the theater. And just other like little Back to the Future, Silence of the Lambs, like things, like you said, that parents are going to get that kids are like, I don't know what the fuck that means. But this one, you know, is Judy Hopps and Nick Wilde. They're kind of teaming up on the police force now, and they're investigating this, you know, after a snake, a reptile, comes into Zootopia, who haven't been seen there for like 100 years, and they're kind of looking into the history of that, and of some powerful, rich, greedy, I was going to say people, but animals, that have kind of been covering up some of that past. So, again, just kind of diving into ideas about, like, you know, land that was taken over by greedy, rich families, and again, just kind of the corruption within politics and wealthy people and stuff like that. So I think it does it well. I think it is like a little bit of a step down just because it kind of hits a lot of the same beats. And again, kind of does like the, we need to accept people for who they are and, you know, live with people. I think a fun element to this one is Judy and Nick being partners and kind of their friendship and like realizing their strengths and weaknesses of working with each other and kind of diving into their stuff more, because that was kind of the strong part of both of these movies is their friendship and relationship there. So I would say a win for Zootopia 2. I really like it. Again, I think both of these movies are standing out as some of the better Disney movies of recent years for sure. Fun investigation elements between both of them. Great animation also, like just the animal fur like looks really good. And just, again, kind of balancing a line of fun action and humor for kids, great themes for adults, kind of meeting all in the middle of two really good animated movies.
Yeah, I'm probably going to try and catch up on this and see this movie this week with my wife, because I'm not going to a theater alone to see this movie.
I did go to a theater
alone. It's so hard it's seeing weird. Kids movies when you were just a lone white dude in your like late 20s and you're just like, don't look at me.
Everyone's looking at me now.
Yeah, like, especially if you, like, sometimes I'll go into a movie, I won't get popcorn or anything to drink, and I feel like by not having, like, a safety blanket or something to carry, I look even creepier, so I'm just
hands in pockets.
Just hands in pockets watching this kid's movie in the back row. I'm like, they all have opinions of me. They're all, like, grabbing their kid a little tighter as they leave the theater. So I'm gonna hopefully go see this movie with my wife, because we're both pretty excited about it. That, the main concern, or main negative that seemingly you mentioned of it kind of rehashing some of the same kind of story outline and themes. That's kind of the one prevalent thing I've heard about this film, aside from it being a good return to Zootopia. So I'm excited to check it out, and hopefully we'll add to its box office numbers in its second weekend as this movie is making bank right now, which good, theaters need it.
Yeah.
A smaller release that I was able to check out this past week, which I did a double feature of this film and Hamnet. I saw Eternity, which I'm about to talk about. I saw it first. And both Eternity and Hamnet aren't, like, the biggest feel-good movies. Like, they're pretty emotional, pretty heavy at times. Hamnet more so than Eternity. But nonetheless, it was a fucking, just a heavy viewing at the theater for me that day. It wrecked me by the end of it, and I just went home and I was like, just quiet the rest of the day. But Eternity, directed by David Frayne. This is the film starring Miles Teller, Callum Turner, and Elizabeth Olsen. Also got Divine Joy Randolph in it. She's sensational. I love her. I need to watch the holdovers here soon as we're getting into the Christmas time. But it's a film about the afterlife and what happens when you get there. And okay, well, I died in my old age, and now I'm living the eternity, my afterlife, in my shell of when I was the happiest in my life. So, me in my 40s. And you get a lot of good comedy there and good moments. But it's also of an examination of what is your afterlife? What is your eternity going to be? And if you were married before you died, does your partner want to live that eternity with you? Or do you just set out and do your own thing? Like, what is your second life going to be? Is it going to be a continuation, or is it going to be a whole new chapter for you? And I think that this film examines that pretty in a fun and inventive way. It has a lot of great style to it. I mentioned to you at Thanksgiving that it reminded me a little bit of Big Bold Beautiful Journey from this year. Not necessarily in like the storytelling, but it was just like the style, the aesthetic of the movie. It felt very fresh and new and quirky at times, but I really liked it. Like, the Eternity is basically like a little bit of like a TVA in Loki, where they're like, oh, well, like, it's all 70s here, and we have like a bunch of like almost like a job fair of different booths of different eternities you could pick. Like, do you want to go to like Sunset Tropical Eternity, or do you want to go to Cabin Eternity in the woods, or do you want to go here where everyone's named Jared? Like, what do you want to do? And there's a lot of good humor in it, but there's also a good examination of kind of relationships, and do you continue on with your wife into a new eternity? What if your wife had an ex-lover that decided, you know what, I don't want to pursue an eternity until the life I didn't get to have, my wife gets to arrive, and I get to share that second attempt at a life that we could have had. And there's great moments between this core.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Three of Miles Teller, Elizabeth Olsen, and Callum Turner. And sometimes the story gets a bit predictable, where she has to make a decision, Elizabeth Olsen, between her first husband and Miles Teller, her current husband, that in her mind's eye she saw a week ago before she passed. And now she's like, oh, you're here. We're dead. And my husband from 50 years ago that died in the war is also here. Shit. And there's a lot of good humor, but also it's just weighing that kind of predicament, weighing your options, and by taking a long time to choose, it makes Callum Turner, Miles Teller's character, get a little bit more anxious, a little bit more angry, a little bit more worried. And it's kind of a good movie that makes you examine what you would want out of your own eternity, your own afterlife, or what you view as your own afterlife. And while it does get predictable, and there are some conveniences that the story outlines in the movie, like, this is a rule of this, you cannot break this rule, and then the film bends it pretty significantly, and I'm like, okay, that's a bit convenient for your sake, but I really enjoyed the movie. It is a bit predictable at times, and the one thing I wish I could have had more of was more Miles Teller and Callum Turner in scenes one-on-one, just duking it out, or having conversations, just because those moments when they're just with each other were some of my favorite moments of the film, as they're like kind of arguing their case as to why their Elizabeth Olsen needs to end up with them, and why they want why their story is what needs to continue on. And I really enjoyed that kind of dynamic, but also the somewhat quasi-friendship that kind of stems from that between those two characters. So it's a really fun watch. It almost got me a couple of times, especially towards the end, even though it is a little predictable, but a couple of times where I was like, I can feel my eyes kind of glazing over a little bit. Like, I'm starting to well up a little bit with tears. It's a movie that my wife really wanted to see, and then I said I'm going to see it by myself and didn't give her a chance to see it with me, and she's still pissed at me for it. So I'll probably check it out in theaters again, just because I figured I was really lucky to get my wife to see Wicked with me and then also Wake Up Dead Man. That I was like, she doesn't go to a lot of movies. She's probably tired, so maybe I go see Eternity by myself, because otherwise if I'm waiting around for her, it's going to be another like 3 weeks, and I'm really excited about this. So kind of an asshole move, but I went and saw this movie by myself. And I'll probably be taking my wife to it here in probably another week or two.
Let me tell you this. You would not want to see what I would do to get Elizabeth Olsen in Eternity. It would be a fucking melee. Yeah. Especially with no consequences in Afterlife. Like, I can't die. What, are you going to stop me?
That's one thing that they bring up in the movie a couple of times where I was like, I wish that they would dive into that more of like, they're like, oh, don't slip. And he's like, what, am I going to fucking die? Like, I can't die again. And I was like, I wish they would do more with that. But I guess that's true. You could just go on a complete murder haul.
Oh, it would be.
or just like, she's coming with me. Like, we're going here. And they're like, sir, this is not okay.
This would be like an Odell Beckham from 2016 run in the fucking Afterlife here. It would be disgusting for people to watch this. But anyways... That's what I would do.
Yeah, that's what you'd do. I think you'll like this movie. Are you going to try and check it out? If you don't make it to in theaters, I don't think you're doing it a big disservice. Like this, at times, I'm like, I could imagine watching this on TV at home, streaming, mm-hmm. which I might have to do with my wife if she doesn't make it to the theater. Like, if you check it out in theaters, I don't think you're going to get something, a whole different visual experience as to what you would get on your own TV at home. So, like... Which I don't often say that. I'm always like, go see it in theaters. If this one falls to the back end because there is still a lot of homework for us to do for movie watching and preparing for the Oscars and award season, if this one falls to the back half, I'd understand. And if you caught it on streaming, that'd be probably fine.
I think, yeah, I definitely do want to see it. But again, you kind of mentioned there's just a lot of stuff still coming out. So I'll definitely check it out at some point. A movie I did prioritize this week was J. Kelly, which is... another Netflix movie. There's been so many Netflix movies that have come to theaters for like a week and a half, and then go to Netflix. I've tried to prioritize those ones just to support those and hopefully show Netflix like, hey, people show up to these. Like, give this a full theatrical release. This comes from Noah Baumbach, who has made a couple movies that I really love. The Squid and the Whale, While We're Young, and Marriage Story. I all love those movies. I think they're great, really well written. And then White Noise, his last movie, I didn't really care for. It seems like it didn't really connect with a lot of people either. Yeah. Like, even people that liked it were like, yeah, it's okay, it's fine. But I think he is a really strong writer for a lot of his movies. He was a writer on the Barbie movie, with Greta Gerwig. So this movie is about an aging movie star named J. Kelly, who is played by George Clooney. It's a very meta role. I'll get into that in a second. But he kind of goes on a journey of self-discovery, looking at his past and his present. And essentially, he's trying to reconnect with his daughter and with his whole family. And his daughter's going on this trip to Europe. And he just kind of spontaneously goes out there and does it. Also, there happens to be a tribute happening in Europe for him that he's kind of going there for as well. Kind of encompassing his career and honoring that. So... again, going into this movie, you see George Clooney in a movie about an aging actor, and you're kind of like, oh, okay, yeah, like, this is, like, no shit. Like, you're kind of just hitting that note a lot. I like that the movie, from the opening, there's an opening line of dialogue in this movie that was kind of put me at ease of that a little bit, where it's, I don't have the quote exactly, but it's something along the lines of, like, the toughest responsibility you can have is to play yourself. And it's a lot easier to play somebody else or no one at all.
Mm.
And I really like that as kind of setting the groundwork for this movie. And it's, you know, I think a lot of people do that for sure, just like in real life of kind of, you know, whether certain groups of people you're around kind of acting differently around them and not truly being yourself, whatever. I think it's kind of a great way to set up this movie. And I really just liked it because it's this introspective look at this guy who kind of threw away some of his family relationships to pursue fame, you know, to become a big movie star in these roles. And he's kind of wishing he could go back and have another take. That's kind of a thing in this movie. The opening and closing scenes are great bookends for it. of having another take or having another one, and they kind of mention. And it's just a really nice look at this character who is flawed, and he makes choices where you're like, ah, don't fucking do that. Like, you're being dumb right now. You're being the dumb rich guy. But George Clooney's great. I mean, and he is really good, and it is a meta role, and you can feel that George Clooney is doing a bit of self-introspection himself of his career. But you also have great supporting performances from Adam Sandler, who I think is Oscar-worthy. I would love to see him get his first nomination for it. But also Laura Dern is great in this movie as well. And they have really good conversations. They're both kind of like his manager or his publicist. And they talk a lot about their relationship with J. Kelly. And they're like, is he actually our friend? Or is he just kind of like, is it very one-sided where we put in so much for him and he is just the movie star that is kind of benefiting from our work? They have a lot of great stuff there. Billy Crudup stands out in this movie as well. He has a really great kind of opening, or not opening scene, but in the first act of this movie, where he's this guy that kind of got wronged by J. Kelly in the past and in an audition, and he kind of got overshined by J. Kelly. And he has just a really very memorable scene in a bar. And I think if he got nominated for supporting actor as well, I'd actually be really happy because he's that good. But there's just a really fun journey with this character, and you get a lot of great flashback scenes of J. Kelly just examining his life of a first audition for him, of one of his first big scenes with a star and like a woman he fell in love with, and then just some great like conversations with his daughter on the phone, and the way that they presented in the movie is really cool and interesting. So this one really worked for me. I didn't expect to like this as much as I did. But I think it's a really strong movie. It is, again, kind of the Oscar packaging of, like, wow, a movie about movies and movie stars, which we get that a lot. But I like this one. It worked really well. I think it is worth a watch if it is still in theaters, but definitely check it out on Netflix if you're interested at all in kind of the concept.
Yeah, I'm a pretty big Noah Baumbach fan as well. White Noise, like you mentioned, also... I think I liked it maybe a smidge more than you, but I still didn't love it. Yeah. I was like, this just feels like way too much. But I'm really excited. The biggest selling point is Adam Sandler in this film for me. Mm-hmm. And that supporting role, something a little bit more serious. I'm sure he has like comedic elements, but something that's a little bit more of a drama-heavy role has me really excited. I'm probably going to have to catch this on streaming this upcoming week when it goes onto Netflix. But I'm still super excited about it. I like the idea of this story. And I feel like we don't get George Clooney headlining a lot of movies a whole lot anymore. I mean, we get him at the very tail end of Flash, and that's great.
Yeah,
and we all get to be super happy that he's that Bruce Wayne Batman. That's fantastic.
Sweet, now it's over.
Yeah. Bye-bye, never again. Sick. But I'm really excited. I like the cast. Of course, Greta Gerwig's going to be in here because it's a Noah Baumbach movie, so why not? But she's also a sensational actress, so I'm really excited to see it. And again, I'll be checking out this week. So next week or next recording, you'll hear me kind of get to tag team this conversation a little bit later, and we'll get to go back and forth a little bit more about what we both thought about J. Kelly. But I'm still really excited to see it nonetheless. Similar to that, a film that Corey saw a while ago, or maybe was it 2 weeks ago? Nouvelle Vague, I think. I forgot about this movie. I forgot it was even on Netflix. And then I was just like scrolling one morning. I had to let my dog out, and then I was up at... way earlier than I was anticipating it being up, and I was like, eh, I can maybe throw on a movie while I'm waiting for everyone else to kind of wake up, and the house kind of wakes up around me. So I was like, oh, fuck, I should watch Nouvelle Vague. Put it on. It is, which Corey talked about prior, it is the film directed by Richard Linklater that kind of builds into the real story of the making of the film Breathless in 1960 by Jean-Luc Godard, which is at the front end, that new wave of French cinema, which I didn't know that Nouvelle Vague literally meant new wave until I googled it I think yesterday. But this film, as someone who, similar to you, I really appreciate Breathless, but I don't love it as a movie. I didn't love watching it. I still think it's well made, and it's really interesting how different it is, especially from movies that were being put out widely at that time, as this was at kind of the forefront of the new wave of French cinema. But I still really had a great time watching this. And this movie, I think I liked more than I like Breathless.
Yeah.
But it does make me want to rewatch Breathless, too. And I think it's so well handled and completely is in line with the visual aesthetic and the feel of what Breathless looks like. It feels like a film that was made in the 1960s. And when people in the house I was at, my in-laws, when they were starting to wake up yesterday morning and I had Nouvelle Vague on, they're like, oh, why are you watching this movie from like 1965? And I'm like, well, actually it's from this year. Like, oh, I'm that guy. And they're like, really? And I was like, yeah, this give them the short end of like what this movie's about. And they're like, I don't give a shit.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Like, okay, cool.
You say French New Wave.
Yeah, I'm like, it's not French New Wave, but a movie called Breathless from the 60s. And they're like, what the fuck's that? Like, why do I care? And I'm like, no, you guys don't get it. It's really good. And,
like, all right, well, we go upstairs.
All right, yeah, I'm going to go upstairs. I'm going to watch Sicario, Day of Soldado in the basement. I'm like, all right, fine, I get it. But I had a great time watching this. And again, it gave me a newfound appreciation for Breathless as someone who thinks that movie's well made. Now I want to go back and revisit it again, which I've never really felt the urge to do until after watching Nouvelle Vague. So I had a great time with it. It goes by quick. It's mostly in French, so if you can't do subtitles, read a book. And then watch this movie, because it's worth it. So it was a really good watch, and I really like the cast. Zoe Deutsch is popping up, I feel like, a lot, and I think she's exceptional in this film, and she kind of is almost like a co-lead at times, as she is the one that is going is at odds with Jean-Luc Godard the most of like, dude, we shot one thing today. How the fuck are you going to leave set right now? And he's like, I'm out of ideas. Bye. And she's like, I'm going to kill him. Do I walk from this fucking shoot? So there's a lot of good humor, but it's also just a good kind of peek behind the camera, behind the lens of how the film was made. And I think my favorite moment in the movie is when they're like, oh yeah, we'll put the cinematographer in this like wheelbarrow cart almost, and we'll just cut a hole out for the camera so people don't see that we're filming, and they'll just see the actors acting. And I'm like, that's a smart idea, but also this looks so hilarious. But I'm like, I like that idea of like a peek behind the lens and being able to see the guerrilla filmmaking of it all. So it's a fun watch. I really liked it, and it's a good kind of peek back at film history and especially the French New Wave. So I'm excited to rewatch Breathless now after watching this, and I'd recommend you checking out both if you haven't seen it. And are you going to rewatch? You watched Breathless while in that same week of watching Nouvelle Vague, but you watched Breathless first, I'm guessing, right?
Yep. So I hadn't seen Breathless before, watched it before seeing that. And it was a great double feature, kind of like you mentioned, just of knowing the filmmaking and like even watching Nouvelle Vague and just seeing like the extras who weren't extras, just like looking back at this cart going down.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's a cart now, but you're just like, yeah, like it's just guerrilla filmmaking. I love movies about making movies, so I think that works for both of us for sure. This is definitely one of my favorite Linklater movies. I really enjoy it. Like, I mean, I love the Before trilogy. I like Boyhood a lot. I just this one kind of stood out from some of his other stuff for me for sure.
Mm-hmm. And what was his other movie this year? Pale.
Blue Moon, which Blue Moon. Ethan Hawke is getting a lot of buzz for best actor for that. I'm curious to watch that one. This movie, to me, I've kind of thought about for like award season. I think Zoe Deutsch is great, but also I would love to see it get recognized in the best casting category, which is the first year they're doing it. And I think we'll probably talk about that more. I actually have a lot to say about that category, but I think with this casting a lot of people that aren't really known besides Zoe Deutsch, I think like the main guy, Guillaume Marbeck in the movie is really good. And just that kind of embodies what I think of best casting is like a lot of unknown people who are really good in the movie. So I'm glad you got to check it out.
Yeah, my favorite kind of actor I've never seen before, but he was the co-director or like the assistant director on set. His was played by Benjamin Cleary. He just a bigger guy with glasses. He's just like, yep, we're good. Yep, move on. And he just has to kind of be the one going to bat for Jean-Luc Godard in these moments where they're like, all right, we're done for the day. And he's just like, that's what boss said. Yep, we're done. And I'm just like, there's a lot of good humor with his character. And he was probably my favorite part of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I did really enjoy it. And I think I kind of agree with you. This is one of my, of his more recent efforts, one of my more favorite Richard Linklater films. Movies about filmmaking. Like, I need to watch, what is it, The Player? I feel like that's one that always gets talked about with, I think Tim Robbins is in that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, films about filmmaking, you sold me.
You got us.
Yeah.
To step away from the Oscar, the Jay Kellys, the Hamnets, the Nouvelle Vagues, all that
more
stuff.
More pretentious stuff, yeah.
All the fun things that we eat up because we're film nerds. I watched Sisu Road to Revenge this week. I rewatched the first movie, which we both saw in theaters around our birthdays a couple of years ago. Really fun movie. Big surprise, kind of the John Wick in World War II as it was marketed, and it really is that. Essentially, both of these movies take place at like the end of World War II in Finland, and the main guy, played by Jorma Tomila, is the main character who has, I think, three lines of dialogue throughout both movies. Oh. He doesn't speak at all in the second movie, if I remember right. He only has lines at the end of the first movie. Love it. That's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
That's like a classic action hero where it's just like a dude in the first movie. He is, you know, it's kind of the end of the war. He's an ex-soldier. He is this kind of legend. He was this commander in the Finnish army against the Russians and against the Nazis and everything. And he's just trying to, he gets some gold and he's just trying to like get it to the bank.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fucking Nazis are like, oh, we kind of want that gold. And he's like, guys, don't. Like, fucking stop. Like,
come on.
It's like him and his dog, again, kind of back to the John Wick thing. It's like, him and his dog are just like, just let us go by. And they don't let him go by. And they give him hell. And there is so much fun action in both of these movies. The first one especially, like, is a little bit more grounded than the second one. But it's just like a really fun kind of World War II setting where a lot of, like, World War II movies are often very depressing, like Schindler's List or The Pianist, where it's like, ooh, this is heavy, the Holocaust, like, this is a lot of stuff. This movie's, like, just crazy batshit fun, unbelievable, and this is, both of these movies are like, you need to go with it. You need to just be like, none of this is believable. This isn't based on a true story or anything, so don't go and being like, oh, that wouldn't actually happen. Shut the fuck up. This is fun action where a dude is underwater, cuts a windpipe, and sucks air out of the windpipe from the other dude. I'm like, I forgot about this from the first one? Fuck yeah! That is so fucking cool!
Like, I forgot about that.
Like, that is unreal. It's just like, there's so many great, like, vehicle chases in that first one, too. I love that first movie. I liked it a lot more on a rewatch. I remember coming out of the first one being like, it was good.
Yeah, it was a good
like,
watch, yeah.
It kind of got hyped up a lot, I think, before that first watch we did. We were both kind of like, it's good. On a rewatch, I really liked it. And then the second one, Sisu Road to Revenge, kind of feel like came out of nowhere a little bit as far as a sequel.
Yeah, kind of surprised that they're even touching this again. And I was like, really? Okay.
Yeah, and with this one, it is a bit more of like a personal story, like more emotional, where like the war, like I mentioned, is coming to an end. And Finland kind of ceded some ground to the Russians. And the main character's house was in that land, so he goes back. He gets, like, all of the wood, all the logs, everything from his house, takes it all, and he just wants to bring it back to Finland and, like, rebuild his house kind of with his, you know, his family got killed in the war, so just the memories there. And, again, the fucking Russians are like, no, we're going to stop you from doing that. Stephen Lang is the main villain in this movie. That's great. He has so much fun in the role. This movie steps it up a notch. The action is just unbelievably fun and crazy. There's parts where there's, like, a fucking dogfight going on, and a plane goes, and it just ramps off a truck.
I remember seeing that in the trailers, and I was like, yes, this is fantastic.
That's great. There's a part where a tank just fucking flips. Just a bomb goes off, and it flips and lands right side up. In the ending sequence on a train, there's a lot of really great, like, quiet sequences of glass on the ground, but then a fucking missile is just going through all of the cars very slowly. It's so much fun. It is like, it's not like, I hate saying like turn your brain off and watch a movie, because I think there are like some good emotional beats here, but it is just like, you gotta accept it, you gotta go with it. And I think Jorma Tomilla is really great in both of these movies. He just is a man of few words. He's just kicking ass. He's having fun. It's World War II setting in Finland, which I really like. The action is fun. It's unbelievable. Both movies just hit it really well, and I think I kind of prefer the second movie just like a hair.
Oh, really?
I think it just has more fun, where and it also does have more of that kind of personal story for the main character. And then Stephen Lang as the villain is really he's a lot of fun too. So if you haven't seen the Sisu movies, they're really great. They are kind of the John Wick of World War II in Finland, but that's fucking awesome. Like, there's no issue with that at all. So I really like it. If it's still in theaters right now, go check out the first one and then watch the new one, because they're just fun. Turn your brain off amidst the kind of Oscar onslaught of movies coming out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of want to revisit the first Sisu, because I haven't seen it since we saw it in theaters on our birthday, like, what, 2 years ago? And I will likely see Road to Revenge at some point. Again, it's just like such an afterthought to me, one, that this movie got made, and two, I feel like they're just like, and it's out now. And I was like, whoa, okay, didn't really know, aside from like the trailer of that dogfight you mentioned of like the slats of wood coming down and then ramping off a truck, and I was like, what is going on? Also love that he doesn't fucking talk. That sounds great. That's going to really kill it. But I'm excited to see it because I love the John Wick movies. I really enjoyed the first Sisu movie. This one, the one thing I've heard is that it gets increasingly more bombastic. Like, it's a little bit more out there. Physics schmizzics.
Put them aside.
Yeah, a little Fast and the Furious at times. And that's completely fine by me. I'm kind of already sold on that. So I'll probably check it out here sometime soon, hopefully. I just don't know when. A film that I bought the Criterion of during this Barnes & Noble Criterion half-off sale that they do in November and into the very beginning of December. I bought Barry Lyndon, which is a film I've kind of... It's been one of, like, the bigger, like, holes in my filmography of, like, films that I've seen or, like, classic movies that I need to go back and watch, especially since Stanley Kubrick is my favorite director of all time. This is kind of his big masterpiece, his big epic, almost. The cinematography and the art direction, everything within this film, the lighting... Visually, this is one of the more arresting movies I've ever seen. It is, obviously, it comes from Kubrick, who did The Shining, Paths of Glory. I still haven't seen Lolita. That is now the only film of his I haven't seen. Barry Lyndon, I got that one checked off the list. But this film, the synopsis is, an Irish rogue wins the heart of a rich widow and assumes her dead husband's aristocratic position in 18th century England. It's a good synopsis for the last half of the movie. The first half is this guy just kind of bumbling around and falling in love with his cousin, but that's, oh, but this British soldier actually wants to marry his cousin. He's like, well, no, I love my cousin and I want to be with her. Oh. That's not cool. So then they're going to duel, and with that duel and how it kind of carries out, they're like, dude, you need to run. Because now that you did what you did and people are going to try and find you because of how this duel played out, which I'm trying to be vague, which... It's a duel, there's two people in it, and if he's the one alive, you can kind of gather at least an idea as to where how it ended up, which, I don't know, it was kind of refreshing how that unfolded, but I really liked it. And just this man just trying to find a way, not even necessarily to wealth, but just to an existence that he can bear. Because, like, he gets thrown into the military, and then he bounces around, he becomes a prisoner, and then he has to become a spy for this Prussian army that he's like, fuck these guys, I don't want to be a spy for him. So it's just... You follow Ryan O'Neill, this actor who, as this character, as Redmond Barry, before he was Barry Lyndon, Redmond Barry, as he's bumbling through and just, like, trying to have a good living, and then he gets held up at gunpoint on a trail by these two men that are like, give us your horse, you're being really nice and agreeable, so we'll let you keep your hat and your boots, but give us your horse and all your money. And he's like, oh God, what are you guys doing? Come on! But it's a good movie. It's while it's not about like a lot of things, it is a slow-moving, three-hour-long film with an intermission, which I appreciated. But it is kind of a sprawling story of this man's life. It's not always the most, at least for me, it wasn't the most interesting movie throughout, but I was always so arrested by what it looked like. Visually, this is one of the coolest things to look at. And like... We mentioned it a couple of times in the past. Like, I remember when I watched Shane, like, you could frame any still from the movie Shane, and it's just a piece of art. You can do the same thing with Barry Lyndon. It is so visually arresting. This film was from in the 1976 Oscars. It was nominated for 7 Oscars, which was including Best Picture, Best Director. Sadly, didn't win either of those, but it did win 4 for Best Cinematography, Best Art Direction and Set Decoration, Best Costume Design, and Best Original Score. The score is sensational. This is one of the best film experiences you can have between the beauty of what you're watching and the beauty of what you're hearing, and you get a good little story wrapped up in it. It is, like, it feels so Kubrickian, even though it doesn't have some of his more, like, trademarks of, like, the Kubrick stare and stuff like that. Like, it's just, you can feel the attention to detail in every shot, and it stands up. Like, for a movie that came out in 1975, this movie looks sensational still, so I really enjoyed it. It's not my favorite Kubrick movie, which I didn't expect it to become my new favorite Kubrick movie, but I'm really happy that I was able to sit down and watch this movie this past week. It's made me want to go back through some of his other movies that I have seen, like Eyes Wide Shut, and just kind of revisit some of them that aren't necessarily my favorite, but are ones that I'm like, yeah, I still like him. It's my favorite director. He makes bangers, even if they're not, like, perfect. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is a really great time. So I'm excited for you to watch it at some point.
Yeah, this is one I need to check off. Much like you, it's kind of a hole in my filmography for sure, but man, they were just moving different in the 70s, man, with movies. It's crazy how much good stuff was coming out then. One thing that I watched on Thanksgiving night after we had our kind of joint family celebration for Thanksgiving, which was great, my mom and I went back, and she had never seen Crazy Stupid Love. And so we watched that movie. I really enjoyed this one a lot. My mom really liked it, probably mainly because of Ryan Gosling. He has a lot of standout moments in this movie for any women attracted to Ryan Gosling, which I think probably everyone, all of them are.
Yeah, most.
but it's a really well-crafted movie. It came out in 2011, and you have Steve Carell and Julianne Moore going through a divorce, and then Steve Carell befriends Ryan Gosling, who's this bachelor just at the bar who can get any woman he wants. So Steve Carell's like, all right, I need to learn from you. Learn how to get the fucking women here, how to get the lines, how to not dress like a fucking child like Caillou.
Yeah.
And
wearing New Balances.
Yeah. And you have a great cast filling out. Emma Stone, Marissa Tomei, John Carroll Lynch, Kevin Bacon. It's just a really fun group of actors working together. Also just has one of the best plot twists in a movie that you wouldn't expect to have a plot twist. Kind of the Spider-Man Homecoming thing where you're not looking for a twist like a... like a Wake Up Dead Man, where you're expecting a twist, or a Shyamalan movie, you're expecting a twist. This movie's like, oh, fuck, oh.
Yeah, I thought this was just a romantic comedy.
Oh, this is, like, a lot better than it has any right to be. This is really good. And it just touches on, like, a marriage kind of falling apart, but, you know, still being in love with the person you're with. And then of being, like, a bachelor and being kind of playboy and then transitioning into having a real relationship. All that stuff is covered really well here. I really like it. It's a lot of fun. I was happy to show my mom the movie, but I love Crazy Stupid Love, and it's, definitely check it out if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite romantic comedies, and it has consistently one of the funniest scenes in any movie for me when it's towards the beginning, too, when Julianne Moore and Steve Carell's characters are talking about a divorce, and he's in the car, and he's like, if you don't stop talking, I'm going to get out of the car, and he's like, okay, opens the door and falls out. I was just like, oh, God. I love Steve Carell, and it's funny because, like, once that divorce conversation enters the movie, which is pretty early on, and then he has, like, a long, hard look at himself, and he's like, God, I am not, like, I need to get out there, but where do I start? It's, like, almost like him dipping back into, like, Andy from 40-Year-Old Virgin of, like, where do I get started? Oh, Ryan Gosling's in this movie. Fantastic. Yeah. And this was, like, one of the first movies I remember watching Emma Stone in, and, like, because I was really late to seeing Easy A. I didn't see that until I was in high school. And I loved her in this film, and immediately had a crush on her. I also love John Carroll Lynch in this movie. He is just fantastic in everything he pops up in. I saw this movie before I saw Zodiac, and they scared the shit out of me in Zodiac, so I was like, oh.
The Range.
The Range!
Yeah.
But this is also just a stacked cast in this film. Like, you even got Kevin Bacon, obviously Julianne Moore and Steve Carell. So it's such a fun watch, and like you mentioned, like, there's a twist that this movie didn't need a twist, because it's still a great romantic comedy, and then that reveal happens, and you're like, wait a minute, because you're kind of just following different characters and their paths, and you're like, wait a minute, how the whoa, that's how this is going down, that's who you are. And it's very fun, and you wouldn't assume that of this film, because it just really does hide under the guise of, like, yeah, just your kind of regular old romantic comedy, and it's still very funny to me too.
Yeah, very well crafted, and we just don't see a lot of, like,
straight up.
Well-written romantic comedies, I feel like, anymore, so this is a really good one. Coming out this week, a bit quieter of a release. We're both very thankful for that. We're just like, all right, not as much coming out. The big thing is Five Nights at Freddy's 2, which is coming, what, I think 2 years after the first movie came out, obviously based on the game. You got Josh Hutcherson returning, and it's, you know, the fucking animatronic little things at the Freddy Fazbear's Pizza. I've never played the game. I've seen clips of people playing the game in passing before, and it looks kind of fun and interesting. You know, like, if I was a kid and would have played it at the time, I probably would have liked it. But the first movie that came out a couple of years ago, I think, is a fine little horror movie that's kind of, I think I've said it before, like an entry-level horror movie. It doesn't do anything too crazy new, but if you're maybe like wanting to get your kids introduced into movies, or you are a kid that wants to get into horror movies, I think it's a good little entry point for that. I like seeing Josh Hutcherson back, kind of in a franchise. I like him a lot. And I'm excited for the new one. Hopefully they can build off of what they did in the first one, and, you know, having Matthew Lillard in the first one as well was kind of fun, so I hope to see more of him. Skeet Ulrich is in this movie, a little Scream reunion for them. So it looks kind of fun. I'm down for that. And then we have a few other releases. A couple things that I really have not heard of.
Yeah, or the rest of these are non-existent.
I've seen like a trailer maybe for one of these. The first one is Fackham Hall, which I think is like sort of a comedy. Maybe? I don't know. Tom Felton's in it, so Draco Malfoy is, you know, the main guy. But a new porter forms an odd bond with the youngest daughter of a well-known UK family. The Davenport family, headed by Lord and Lady Davenport, deals with the epic disaster of the wedding of their eldest daughter to her caddish cousin. Sounds very posh and very British and very all the things.
Very all the things.
I think it's sort of comedy-based. So, I don't know. It looks like it could be kind of
funny. It is written by, and it looks like he's also in the film, but written by Jimmy Carr, who I really like. He's a very funny stand-up comedian. Okay. And he's on Channel 4. Like, he has a bunch of different, like, 9 out of 10 cats. He has a bunch of different variety shows, and I really think he is funny. I still have heard literally fucking nothing about this movie, so that makes it more interesting to me that someone like Jimmy Carr is attached to it. But I haven't even watched a trailer for this movie, let alone, like, I barely heard about this movie until today.
So. I think I've seen a trailer once, like, a few months ago. Another thing coming along is Merrily We Roll Along. Heard of that one?
I'm gonna look it up right now for the first time.
Getting a wide release. Daniel Radcliffe and Jonathan Groff are in it, so that's cool.
Was it a musical?
Is it? Oh, didn't know that.
When I look up Merrily We Roll Along, there's a 1981 musical, so I'm guessing that this is maybe a... Oh! Fuck, I have no idea. It looks like this is a...
Maybe. I don't know. The plot that I had was it's about a relationship between a composer and his two lifelong friends, a writer and a lyricist and playwright. So, again, I don't know much about this. This is, again, kind of a smaller release week, which is fine by me.
Looks like a new adaptation of the same long-running show, but also the 1981 film. So
there you go.
All right. If you don't want to go see Wicked... Wicked for Good. You can go see this one.
Maybe it seems like Christmas-type vibes. I don't know. From the title. Yeah. Sure. The other thing coming out is a kind of re-release, sort of Kill Bill, The Whole Bloody Affair. Actually, this may be the first time it's in theaters, like in a wide release. Obviously, this is both Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2 combined into one. I think it was in 2006 that they put it out for the first time. I remember like seeing the Blu-ray of it in stores. And it's, you know, Tarantino's movie with Uma Thurman. If you haven't seen either of the Kill Bills, you should definitely watch it. It's great. It's her just getting revenge after being betrayed at her wedding. And it's fun. I don't want to really say too much else if you haven't seen it. But I've not seen The Whole Bloody Affair, like, together. I know that there's, I think, like, a couple things added in.
To kind of stitch it.
Yeah, to stitch it together. So this is obviously kind of a time commitment. It's 4 to 5 hours. Just remembering how long the other two movies are. But... one that if it was not as busy of a season to watch movies, I would probably try and see this. I'll have to check if it's in theaters around us, because I would love to just kind of have a day of Kill Bill and watching those in theaters. I like the first one a lot. I think the second one is a bit of a step down, but I still do really enjoy it. So you got a few options here this week, along with all the other stuff, Zootopia and Wicked for Good and all the Oscar stuff. So Very diverse, kind of in this November going into December season.
Yeah, I think you and I both, the main one is Five Nights at Freddy's 2 this week in terms of releases, but aside from that, it's a good catch-up week, and then maybe if there's, I don't know, if I hear great things about Fackham Hall, maybe I'll check that out. I don't know. Merrily We Roll Along is 2.5 hours, so I'm already like, I don't know about this movie at all. It's potentially a musical. It's 2.5 hours long. I don't know really anything, anyone in the cast except for Jonathan Groff and Daniel Radcliffe, and I'm like, I don't know if that's going to sell me on it, so who knows. Kill Bill, The Whole Bloody Affair, I looked it up. I got two conflicting numbers. I got 4 hours and 41 minutes, and I also got 4 hours and 35 minutes. There is potentially also an intermission baked into that, so I love the first Kill Bill. That is high up on my Quentin Tarantino ranking. Kill Bill Volume 2 is my least favorite Tarantino film, even below Death Proof. I do not like that movie. I've never sat down and succinctly watched Boom Boom back to back, first part or Volume 1, Volume 2, and I think that that might help Volume 2, but as a solo film, I do not like Volume 2 really that much at all. Like, I have no desire to rewatch that movie. So I probably won't be seeing Bloody Affair. Moving into a physical media roundup, this right when I had to talk, I could have coughed this entire time, but now that I have to talk, I have to cough. What we purchased lately, I picked up, I didn't even get to pick it up, I just pre-ordered a fucking Blu-ray that I'm not going to see until, I think, closer to Christmas. I think it actually is coming out this month. But the Begonia 4K Steelbook, which has my favorite artwork, it has my favorite poster for the film as the front cover of the Steelbook, and I'm really excited about that. So I'll be getting that later on this month. And I also, after leaving Wicked for good and having the Wicked Steelbook, I'm like, I kind of want a better copy of Wizard of Oz. So I went and found the Groove, I think it was Groove that released it, Steelbook of Wizard of Oz, which has Dorothy Lang and like a sea of flowers on it, and it has good cover art, and I really enjoyed that. So I'm hoping that if there is a Wicked for Good Steelbook that ever comes out, I can get that, and then I'll have three Steelbooks of my favorite ventures into Wizard of Oz, so, or the Land of Oz. So pretty good week for me.
Yeah, I actually I haven't bought a lot of stuff this year, which is very sad. Just we've talked about a lot of physical media has gone down a bit, but went out for Black Friday, and I got Together. This was not on sale or anything. It was like $23, I think.
That's kind of annoying.
Yeah, kind of sucked. There was no sales at the Walmarts that I went to. But I really like this movie. I mean, we talked about it a while ago. I think it's really good. The cover for this movie is very like, meh. I just, looking at the eyelashes, eyes, yeah, like intertwining, I don't like that. But
do you like the ending? I remember we talked about it. I just don't remember how.
I do really like the ending. I love this movie. This is like near my top 10 of the year.
Okay.
Like, it's very much in that range. I think it's very good. And if you haven't seen it, definitely watch Together. And then I did the Criterion sale you mentioned earlier. I got a movie that I famously hate, Anora, which, you know, probably doesn't make sense if you're like, why'd you get it if you don't like the movie?
If you're a normal person, you'd be like, don't buy it.
Yeah, but for me, I'm like, well, I like to own Oscar movies, Oscar-winning movies. This one, Best Picture, Director, Actress, Editing, so I'm like,
yeah, kind of swept. They're cleaned up. I forgot about
that. Crazy cover on this bad boy here. how about that, huh?
I don't know if you're getting glare.
Crazy stuff. I don't know, probably, but look it up if you, yeah, I don't know, whatever. I don't know, I don't, like, I keep, like, trying to convince myself that I should rewatch it, and then I just never want to watch this again. I've liked it less and less and less every time I think about it.
I've been getting really close to a rewatch of it, because my wife still hasn't seen it, and she really wanted to when it came out last year, so that's kind of the biggest argument to go check it out. But there are moments in that movie that I still really like, and, like, the bumbling idiot posse that is just trying to get Mikey Madison away from everyone. There's a lot of good humor in there, and so that's kind of been the one itch that makes me want to go back and revisit it.
Yeah, we'll see. Maybe my thoughts will change. Who knows? We'll see.
I don't think so.
Probably not. I really hate that movie, and fuck that for one of your best picture. A movie also nominated for Best Picture, Nightmare Alley.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, this is a really great release. I love the artwork on this, and this also includes the extended director's cut on black and white, which I know you've seen that in theaters. I actually have not. I just saw the regular theatrical version. This is a nice beefy 4-disc set. Great artwork, like I mentioned. You get all the different cuts, all the different versions you could want. So 50% off for both of those. I think that's still going on through beginning of December.
I think December 7th.
Yeah.
5th or 7th.
Something like that. So a lot of other movies that I can always buy there, but I just, every year I'm like, two or three that I'll try and get. They have the sale a couple times a year, so go check out What they got there.
I think that Criterion might be the one that I'm the most jealous of you. Because, like, I have the Blu-ray, and I'm like, I don't know. Like, I like Nightmare Alley, but I'm like, do I like it enough to go buy the fucking... the sexy ass.
Yeah. After Frankenstein 2, I'm kind of like, all right.
I'm a little bit of a Guillermo del Toro kick, so I'm like, now's the time to go fucking buy this movie.
Yeah. Also, when I watched this movie in theaters, I saw it with a buddy in college, and there's a couple, like, probably two or three seats down from us, and they were just macking the whole movie.
You're due for a rewatch then.
So, and it's a pretty long movie, and they were just making out the whole time, just smacking lips, and I was like, all right, we can fucking relax down there.
How are your mouths not dry right now?
Yeah, it's like 2.5 hours in this fucking movie, but whatever. As far as things coming out this week, not a big release week, just kind of some older titles coming out on 4K. We have Wanted, His Girl Friday, Paul, and Dawn of the Dead, the Zack Snyder version. So, a couple different options if you're looking to stock up on older movies.
Have you seen Paul?
I have.
I think that movie's underrated. It's good. It's funny as shit.
Jason Bateman's really funny.
I think I went through, in middle school when it came out, I went through a phase of watching that movie, like, every weekend for, like, probably three
it's
months.
Good.
I think that is such a stupid, funny movie. That was my, which Edgar Wright has nothing to do with Paul, really, but it was my venture into Edgar Wright movies because of Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, and then I went on to see Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz, and I was like, oh, I like these guys. Oh, I like this director, too. Mm-hmm. And I saw a lot of his filmography, but Paul's great. That's actually a decent 4K. Moving into movie news, we had a couple of surprising developments. The first being Scarlett Johansson being announced to star in a new bold take on the Exorcist film franchise. This is coming from creative Mike Flanagan, who has been the showrunner, creative director for a lot of great Netflix shows, Haunting of Hill House, Midnight Mass, Haunting of Bly Manor. Also did Doctor Sleep, which is such a great sequel to The Shining. Love him as a creative, but yeah, they're doing another Exorcist movie because Exorcist Believer was so fantastic. Everyone loved it. That's actually a bold-faced line.
What a bland movie.
Ass. It was so boring.
Yeah.
And they really good trailers for that movie, just to really upset you and, like, we're going to bring back this legacy character. She's dead. It's like, okay, what are we doing
She's
here?
Blind for
She's
a lot of
She's blind. Yeah. We're just going to take her eyesight. It's like, why did you bring her back?
All right.
But Blumhouse Universal, this new project, is neither going to be a remake nor a sequel, but it's going to look to expand the franchise's universe outward. Flanagan is attached to be writing and directing as well as producing the film, calling the classic a key inspiration. And while studios hope to revive the series after that kind of failure of Exorcist Believer, which him, Corey and I both did not care for.
Nope.
Paramount has also set, weirdly enough, to distribute a Rush Hour 4, not produce, but to distribute Rush Hour 4. This kind of comes after a weird development of President Trump really being a fan of this franchise,
Hell
supposedly,
yeah.
and just, like, urging this into existence. Brett Ratner would be looking to return despite past misconduct allegations, which I don't really care to get into that. But Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker would be reprising their roles. I think Jackie Chan's like 71 at least right now, so that's great. Sure, why not? Paramount will only handle distribution while Warner Brothers will receive first dollar gross under this kind of unusual revamp deal. So weird, wacky developments in the world of movies. Rush Hour 4 just being a consistent what the fuck is going on story, and I don't know if anyone's asking for a sequel aside from Donald Trump, but here we go. Brett Ratner returns. Let's go. Why not?
I like the idea of Trump just sitting in the Oval Office like, I could use a Rush Hour 4 and kind of be
what
like,
do we got?
Jackie, Chris, let's get a Rush Hour 4 in development. Come on.
Come on, guys.
Come on. Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah, fuck it. Why not? Let's do it.
I actually like Rush Hour 3 a decent amount, which is probably the worst one of the existing three films, so I get
they're fun.
Not? Like, we're getting a fourth Mummy, so like,
it could be maybe a Bad Boys situation where a new one could be really good,
one of the better ones.
So we'll see. Last little blitz of movie news here. After Wicked for Good success, Stephen Schwartz and Wendy Holtzman, who wrote the stage play and were writers and songwriters on the movies, they're developing a new Oz project that is not related to the Wicked or to the Glinda and Elphaba storyline, but kind of another project within that world, kind of a Star Wars spin-off type of thing, if you want to think of it that way. And, you know, I'm down for that, I guess. I don't need those characters to come back. I think I already had issues with where it left off in Wicked for Good, and I don't need that to be undone any more than it already was. So I'm fine. I think that the world of Oz has more opportunities. You could do, you know, maybe not return to Oz, but you could do something.
Do a Munchkin War. Just
fuck it.
Don't go to war. Yeah. Like, or like, spend more time when Nessa's like, you know what? You can't fucking leave this town. You're
Holocaust style story
of Munchkins.
Yes.
You can't leave. We're gonna bring them all here, actually, and get in the furnace.
Yes.
Like, I'm interested enough in getting more time within this newer revamped version of Oz that we've got, and I think the biggest selling point for me is if John M. Chu would be attached to it or not, just because I think he's been great for the director of these past two Wicked films.
Yeah. Couple other little bits of news. For Star Wars Starfighter, Sean Levy said that Thomas Newman is going to compose the score. He's done a lot of great work over the course of his career, so that's pretty cool for him coming in. You know, we've had post John Williams, we've had a lot of good people, you know, Michael Giacchino, John Powell. John Powell did the solo score. We've had Ludwig Göransson do for Mandalorian and some other stuff. So, Thomas Newman, it feels like it fits really well within the Star Wars universe for sure. And then everybody's most anticipated Shrek 5. We got a couple casting announcements. Marcelo Hernandez, who's from SNL. He did the, what was it, the fucking Domingo sketch that was popular. I don't know, maybe I haven't seen it, but some people will maybe know what I'm talking about.
What?
It was like I don't know, it was like a popular thing, and then like Pedro Pascal came in and did a version of it, and like this whole, Sabrina Carpenter did a thing.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know, I don't really watch SNL that much, I just saw clips of it. Also, Skylar Gisondo from Superman, he's going to be in the cast. Both of them are playing Fergus and Farkle, the sons of Shrek and Fiona. So, remember them from Shrek Forever After when they were babies, I think?
I do not.
Okay, well, they're grown up now, and they're voiced by these two gentlemen, as part of the Ogre family. So, hopefully they've updated that animation to look a little bit better.
Yeah, more in line with what it used to be. Yeah.
Whoa, we look bad.
I was like, this is too smooth and too clean and not Shrek.
I want to be dirty little fucking
Shrek. Be nasty, Shrek.
Little slutty Shrek.
Okay. Get in the mood.
Sorry.
Alright, well anyways, aside from all that, thanks for joining us for another episode of Slate Night, the Film Fan Podcast. Be sure to follow us on Instagram and TikTok for more in-depth movie reviews and movie news. In the world of film, it's not just about what's on screen, it's about also who's next to you in the theater.
For Mason and I at Slate Night, that's a wrap.